hours in a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Routy's beagle Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, an ice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff, Mike can hardly steer.
Hey, watch out for the stern!
When he oopers in a pontoon boat, fishing for Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. Mooch is showing dirty shirts.
I just had to kind of bring that back for me. You know,
I love that song.
Played it a while. I think I just needed something to make me cheery and perky.
That'll do it.
Drizzy, rainy day. I mean, my goodness.
Weak.
You know, and I'd like to say it was uncommon, but it's really a month in the spring and a month in the fall. We do tend to get these, you know, week of drizzly weather as much as we hate it. And it only happens a couple times a year.
Well, it hasn't rained in the last year, and we've been saying, we need rain, and then we complain when it rains. Now, we didn't need it all at once, but we needed rain.
Yeah, several people have commented the same thing. The only thing is, it didn't stop raining until September last year, and it just didn't rain.
Then it stopped completely.
It just stopped completely, but it rained all last year, all winter, all spring, all of the summer, and then hit fall and stopped.
Because the river was 10 feet, 12 feet above level for most of that year.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. I just looked today. Yesterday. I haven't looked today yet to see what the river's doing, see if it came up at all. But it was...
Maybe a little. I mean, we did get rain the whole way up the Peace River the last couple of days. So.
Yeah, but it takes...
It takes a while.
For it to come down. I think it was like at a foot or something yesterday. Let's see where it's at. Oh, wow. Okay, started off the week at a half a foot in Arcadia. Remember, we need 2 feet to get water coming down to us? It kept that half a foot, three quarters of a foot until, 3 days ago. And then it hit, there's a little red dot. And then it starts to go up. It goes up to a foot and a half. Right now, we're just under 3 feet of water in Arcadia. We have a flow of 483 cubic feet a second.
Which isn't that much.
No, it's still, I mean, we're only a foot over where we get water flow.
Not a whole lot.
But it's way more than we had a week ago.
Yeah.
So it came up significantly. See, when I looked at it yesterday at this time, and it was at 1.4.
Yeah.
And in the last 24 hours, it came up a foot and a half. So
it's really not going to change anything on the river.
No, a foot and a half is that we've got water coming down now.
Yeah, but most of the fish that have been up there, the tarpon, the bull sharks, the jacks, it's not going to affect them. They're going to stay
there. Well, they're going to stay there, but if... Okay, let's say it keeps raining today, and, you know, it's supposed to back off, tomorrow or the next day?
Yeah, tomorrow's supposed to be beautiful.
Yeah.
70% or 50% chance of rain in the afternoon, so it's back to normal Florida.
Yeah, it could rain every day.
Yeah.
So, okay. But if it comes up another foot and a half, that's enough fast-moving water to wash tilapia down, to wash the bait down, to wash a lot of stuff down. That could make the river the place to be
Absolutely.
This weekend.
Absolutely.
I mean, Shell Creek, I'm going to get time off and head up to Shell Creek, hopefully today or tomorrow.
I would be up there today or tomorrow. That should be flowing pretty well over the dam, and that should be a pretty good place to be.
There's got to be snook tarpon. It's been long enough for that freshwater tent to come down to tell the fish, yes, the water's moving.
Yeah.
Okay, fresh water's coming in. All right, that means food, and they're all, you know, dumping up
there. Everything's heading up there. And we're seeing the same thing in the canals. Everything's heading to those spillways and those little drainage pipes underneath 41.
And it's going to be a pretty severe split. You're going to have the mouths of the canals with some fish in them, and then it's going to go all the way back to wherever it meets the freshwater dams.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, you're not going to have a lot of fish in between.
No.
Right now. You're either going to have to go to the dams
or all the way to the mouth.
Out to the mouth to look for them.
That's exactly what my guy was today. We canceled. He's been sitting off his dock catching snook and tarpon all day long.
And he PGI or Port Charlotte?
He's in Port Charlotte Canals. He's about an eighth mile down from one of the drainage pipes.
Yeah, he's real close to 41.
Yeah.
Where every canal and ditch and everything that crosses US 41 is dammed off so that no salt water goes the other way. Fresh water flows over a dam, through a pipe, through a weir system, something. But a physical barrier, it's not imaginary.
Right.
41 is the physical barrier. Most of the water under 41 itself is salt brackish, and you will see the dams there on that east side of the road. But that, to me, is going to be, you know, I was thinking, what am I going to post about fishing? Where could you go? Heck, all these spillways got
every last spillway. Every last spillway is going to be just going crazy. All those snook, all those tarpon are going to head up to that flowing water. It is bringing new and fun things to eat across that dam or through that pipe.
Yeah, it actually should be really pretty good right now. It goes to show, I was sitting in the house this morning, wondering, what the heck am I going to write about? What am I going to post about? You know, okay, it's windy, rainy, it's nasty. Yesterday, I thought in the morning, I got up early and I was thinking, oh man, I can head out. Boy, look at the weather. It's so nice.
Yeah.
And before I could have gotten back, it was hitting 60 miles an hour.
Exactly.
You know, I could have flew back if I would have had the Bimini up, you know. Could have been, you know, the Wizard of Oz coming in for a landing in the yard.
Well, we had that good storm front pass through. We should be fine from here on out. They made a big deal about it, and as usual, it was nothing.
It wasn't. It wasn't. There was one of the guys who comes in all the time. I was talking to him last night, and he had just put up one of those new canvas covers, you know, with the metal frames on it for the boat. Backed his boat underneath it, had a boat cover on it. Put it under the nice frame, and a frame is gone. It's twisted. The boat cover's all ripped to shreds. He got in a downdraft, and he says
that'll do it.
Wind gauge was hitting 64 or something like that at his house. And so, unfortunately for him, it wasn't as... That's a lot of
wasn't
money.
Wasn't as nothing,
water.
Yeah.
It wasn't as much of a... It wasn't disastrous. You know, nobody lost the roof or anything like that. Nobody got hurt. But he's looking going, I just got done with that. He literally had backed it underneath there the day before yesterday and got destroyed. So
I think that's the nice thing.
With that luck.
It's amazing. I mean, I check the weather now before I do anything.
Right.
You know, as a charter captain, I've got to check the water anyways or check the weather anyways. But just for fishing. That's all we'll check the weather for is fishing. If we're going to go out and mow the lawn, we don't pay attention. If we're going to put a cover over our boat, we don't pay attention. Look at the weather.
I can honestly tell you, before the Weather Channel changed, I mean, now it doesn't even, the weather didn't even come on until like 6 o'clock or something like
that.
You know what I mean? I think they're moving it up a little bit now.
Well, they sent Jim Cantori to Naples because a parking lot filled up with water.
Yeah. But I mean... when the Weather Channel was 24 hours a day, I would wake up in the morning, turn the Weather Channel on, do all the stuff you do in the morning, you know, and then sit there with coffee and, you know, figure out what the weather was going to do. And now I have to, you know, I go on fishingfranks.com when I wake up, check out the weather, and pretty much done with it because I can see the state radar, and then I got NOAA right there, so I click
and
those.
We all have smartphones.
And
there's an app for that.
Yeah, I don't like
it. You know, I check three or four of them, you know, before I go. I check your website. I check my app for radar. I check the Weather Channel. I check the Weather Bug. I look at them all before. And you can probably average them out and get a pretty good handle on the weather.
Yeah. So,
because, again, it's the only bigger liar than a fisherman.
Okay, so anyway, before long, we got to get into fishing here. What was going on before the weather hit?
Directly before the weather hit, tarpon were going crazy. And that's pass tarpon, that's bridge tarpon, canal tarpon. All the tarpon were going absolutely crazy. Everybody was saying it was the best bite and they've seen in the last 20 years right before this front came through.
That was your phone.
Yeah.
I would have held it up to the bike.
And it let you know something was happening. It was that good of a bite. We sat down at the 41 bridge, and I'd say for the first five casts, we couldn't get two rods in the water. But as soon as the bobber would hit the water, it was under the water, and we had a tarpon on. So it was enough to make you say something's coming.
Right. Big front coming.
Well, it followed the elephants.
Okay. We're following the elephants.
If you're sitting someplace and a herd of elephants runs by where it shouldn't be, you follow the elephants. Something's coming. The animals know before we do.
So what you're saying is when you see the fish feeding that hard,
yeah,
the pressure is going to drastically drop.
Absolutely. They feel it days, if not weeks, before we do. And we don't even really feel it anymore. No. Unless you got a bum knee and you're 80 years old, and then you feel it.
Yeah. I think in my case it's hard because I don't know which ache is from the weather and which ache is from the day before.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there does become that point is, was it an ache because of what I did the day before? Did I sit too long doing paperwork, or did I, you know,
or is there a front coming?
Or is there a front coming? Yeah. I think the reason why, if you hit retirement and then you feel these aches, it's because you're retired. You don't have to, you know, hurt yourself every day.
Right.
So when the bum pain comes up, you actually feel it. So anyway, getting into the fishing, the tarpon were going off like crazy. You said in the pass, back in the harbor. Now, had the tarpon moved up into the harbor?
No.
No.
No. They had moved up into the hill, which is just inside the pass.
Right.
And they'll bounce in between the pass and the hill and the pan, which is just off. I'm sure this storm has driven them back off shore.
Okay.
For good distance.
Everybody's talking, and we're kind of convinced, for one reason or another, thunderstorms push the tarpon out into the Gulf.
Sure.
Why? What do you think?
I think it has to do with their sense of vibration.
So you're a sound guy. You think
absolutely
it's the thunder, not the lightning.
No, I don't think it's the lightning. I don't see why the lightning would bother the fish.
I know why lightning bothers me. I'm terrified.
I can see why
hit three times.
Well, yeah, you know? I can see why the thunder would bother them. When we go to the bridge to fish at night, you'll notice that the fishing gets better after about 10 o'clock, after the cars quit going over the bridge. Cars travel the bridge, they hit those expansion joints. You hear your tires hitting them thump, 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 thump as you go over the bridge. That's putting vibrations down through that concrete, down through those pilings into the water. And it's noisy for a fish, especially one with such a keen sense of vibration like a tarpon.
Well, and a keen sense of vibration is a keen sense of hearing, boys and girls.
Right. And I think that thunder bothers that sense of vibration.
Okay.
It's a very low pitch, which we know travels further
like
and faster.
A young person listening to rap music in their car, and all you hear is the boom, boom, boom.
And
boom.
How often do we shake our head at that, us older people? It's probably no different with a tarpon.
That's the first time I've ever heard you express yourself in my realm, but
because I don't listen to that type of music anymore, so I've obviously gotten old. I think today's music sucks, so I've obviously gotten old, so I have to put myself in that category.
Okay. Now,
and I had to squint to tie a knot.
Yeah, really?
So we're entering that stage.
But
yeah, I think it's the thunder that does it.
So
I don't think they're going to be offshore that long, because tomorrow's a full moon. And they've got to come into the pass and start their breeding ritual. So they'll be right back.
Well, we're also got huge tides overnight. I mean, in the day and night, we're we're going from a 2 point something, I don't know exactly, down to less minus zero. So that's a lot of water to go through the pass, because that's right. The most extreme tides we have is from 2.6 to minus yep. 3 or something.
Those are the hill tides that you hear all the tarpon guys talk about.
And the reason they're called hill tides, if you look at them on a graph, they look like hills. They're not just up and downs, right. Little bumps. They're actually much larger bumps on the graph.
And they're good tides to fish for any of our fish, not just the tarpon.
All right. Most of them happen overnight, though, these bigger hill right. tides. So with this full moon or new moon? Full moon.
Full.
And it's the micro moon or something like that. It's when the moon is the farthest away from us it gets during its, you know,
right.
uneven orbit. A while back we had the big moon, you know, the closest it was going to get. Well,
it's now the furthest
the
away.
Outside. So that would explain why it's hitting like 2.2, 2.3, and
right.
2.6, 2.7.
Right.
So, when we speak of 2 point whatever, 1 point, what we're speaking of is when you look at a map or chart, let's say properly chart, of Charlotte Harbor, and you see it says 10 feet of water, and then we say the tide's at a 1.5, that means there's 11 and a half feet of water there.
Right.
Now, it really doesn't matter much when you're dealing with 10 feet or more like that, but when you look back on the flats and the chart tells you there's 1 foot of water there, and we're dealing with a 1.5, that means there's 2.5 feet of water on that flat.
Correct.
And a 2.6, obviously, you know. But when you start hearing the tides at -4, -6, well, if you only had a foot of water to start with, and you're 6 inches less, you've got 6 inches of water on that flat.
Yep.
That's...
got to watch those negatives.
And just because the chart says high does not mean it's high. That just means that's the most you're getting. Same with low. If it says low tide, that doesn't mean there's very little water there. That just means at that moment, that's the least it's going down. It's going
right.
to be coming back in after that. So basically, you want to figure a 1.5 or higher is a high tide, and a 0.8 to 1.5 is a medium tide, and anything under a 0.8 is a low tide.
Yep.
Or 1.0 and down is a low tide. You know, 1.0 to 1.5 is your middle tide. But anything negative below zero is that's when you're staying off the flats. Most people,
yeah.
Yeah, most people aren't getting on the flats. So, just a little quick explanation there. Now, what do you expect coming up for this weekend?
I think this weekend's going to be great. A lot of these fish have shut down for this front coming through, and they're going to be hungry coming out of this front, combined with the good tides that a full moon brings. And of course, you know, the better the tide moves, the better the fish are going to bite. So now you've got really hungry fish looking for lots more food. So I think this weekend is just going to be spectacular. And really, anywhere you go, it should be good.
Gotcha. Now, do you think the fish are coming back onto the flats? Are you going to look for snook, redfish back on the flats? Or because you're doing charters, are you booked for tarpon? Or you got some mixed trips? Or what do you got?
I've got a little bit of everything. I've got flats trips. I've got some tarpon trips. I've got some shark trips.
All right. Now, if you're going to go back on the flats to do stuff, are you going to be looking more towards the sandbar and the open potholes? Or are you looking up under the trees?
Probably both. I'm going to look underneath the trees for the snook and the redfish just before, just after high tide. When the tide starts to drop out, then I'm going to go work the flats for trout, maybe a wayward cobia, maybe some of the deeper cuts for tarpon, entrance to Bull Bay, entrance to Turtle Bay, stuff like that.
Okay. Now... right before the storm, we were getting scattered reports of trout through Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, Sandfly Key, and very, very few reports on the east side, but a couple ones, mostly smaller fish, some by Boquilla, and a couple up towards Tippecanoe Bay. Are you...
We've been hammering the trout on the east side.
Okay.
And they seem to be between Pirate Harbor and Two Tits, is yeah. where those trout seem to be out on the flats. But I wouldn't say there's a lot of trout, but it's good quality trout. Most of them are going to be upper slot, oversized trout.
Okay.
The fun thing is figuring out what they want to eat that day.
That's what I was going to ask you.
One day they want white bait. One day they want shrimp. The next day they want artificials. So you got to bring a little bit of everything.
Gotcha. Now, back on the mangroves, white bait ruling the world, or is it just kind of, a mixture?
It's been kind of 50-50. If you want snook, take white bait. If you want redfish, take small crabs and shrimp. The redfish haven't really been keying that heavy this year on the white bait.
Right. Right before the front, obviously, been spending time. Did you see any bait coming up in the harbor?
Lots of big thread fins.
Right, glass minnows?
Lots of glass minnows. The glass minnows just seem to be staying around the upper end of the harbor.
20-foot hole or?
20-foot hole up to the 75 bridge.
Okay.
Most of your thread fins, your big thread fins, are running from about Grassy Point on down with, I would say, out in front of Pirate Harbor, the best spot to look.
All right. Now, the reason I'm asking Kale about bait is the glass minnows are what's going to bring in the Spanish mackerel. The Spanish mackerel bring the sharks. The glass minnows always arsal, kafifi.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The glass minnows are kafifi for ladyfish.
And they're the bottom of the food chain. That's where everything's going to start.
It's the glass minnows, the bait that we don't actually use for bait, that actually start everything in process.
Yep.
Because without them, we don't have smaller fish coming to feed, which means we don't have bigger fish coming to feed. Now, what do you think, historically, a good little rain like this and getting a bump in the river brings in more of the glass minnows, more of the thread fins to eat on all the stuff being washed down river.
Right.
And then
a little bump. We don't want too much.
Yeah, as soon as we hit, you know, where it starts hitting like 6 feet over,
right,
then it can actually start washing bait out of the harbor where the harbor gets too fresh.
Yes, and we saw that last year.
Yeah, the bait was non-existent for a few months because it too much fresh water.
Yep.
So, and a little bit that was around was hugging the bottom out in the middle of deep holes just to keep some semblance of salt going because salt is heavier than water.
I like it when that happens. When they hug that bottom, they're much easier to get a cast net on than when they're up at the top like they usually are.
All right. Why would that be?
Well, when you're throwing a cast net on those big thread fins, for starters, they're fast. We think they're slow because we see them milling around the top of the water. When you spook them, they move.
Well, you figure, let's say they can move 10 miles an hour. And so they can cover 10 feet in a really
split second.
Short time. Yes.
Right. And when you throw that cast net in deep water, it hits that water and pauses for a second. And then it starts to sink. And by then, they're already out underneath it.
Right.
Now, I can get them usually pretty consistently, but I don't throw on them when they're on the top. I get the boat in front of them. They see the boat. They sound. Then throw the cast net off the other side of the boat. And it usually comes up full every time because they're down there. The net doesn't spook them. They don't have anywhere to go to get from underneath it.
Yeah.
So that's the best place to get them. Usually when you throw it on those ones on top, you're coming up empty almost every throw.
Okay. Well, makes good sense. And I always figure, if you're asking me what size cast net to use, figure on a 3/8 inch net, 1 foot of water per foot of net. If you have an 8-foot net, and that's with the lead on the ground holding up to the horn. Not how many feet across you think it is. Literally, from the lead weights to the horn, the plastic ring on the top. That's how you measure a net. And 8-foot net is 8 feet of water. That's where it's going to find its best uses, 8 feet and under. With a quarter-inch mesh, you're literally going down to 3/4 of a foot per foot.
If not half. They sink pretty slow.
And so if I've got a 10-foot net, it's going to be pretty effective till around 6 foot of water, maybe 7.
And that's a quality net.
Yeah.
You're not going to get away in the deep water with the cheaper nets. They just don't have the weight on them.
Yeah, it's got to be a pound and a half per foot.
At least.
Pound and
at
a quarter,
least.
Pound and a half. So now if you've got half-inch mesh or 5/8, you can go a you know, a 10-foot net, you can go 1.5 foot per foot of net. So it gives you much more depth.
Right. But so, the downside to that is some of your thread fins get stuck in that.
Well, you, if you're throwing for tarpon and big thread fins,
right,
you they don't get gilled as much.
So, and I use a 3/8 out there in the deep water because it's easier on the bait.
Right.
Thread fins are hard enough to keep alive to begin with. Especially when you go out there in the morning, get that bait, and you don't plan on using them till midnight. They're hard to keep alive, especially if you've beat them up with a larger mesh net, pulled their scales off. That, yeah, that 3/8 kind of hugs them a little better. It's a lot more gentle on them. I don't see anywhere near the amount of scales inside my live well. I can transfer them to a bait tank and keep them alive until I need them that night.
Okay, yeah, see, I never had a problem. I went with the half-inch or 5/8 for the big thread fins just because I didn't want to throw that much. I'm historically lazy. We all know that.
You got to have patience.
Yeah. So I went, in the winter, I had 1/4 and 3/8, and yep, in the summer, I had 5/8 and 3/8. So, you know, that's, but I only have 2 bins for cast nets. So it was one or the other.
Exactly.
Occasionally I would leave one in a bucket on the deck, but I just have my little bin in the back deck of my boat for it. And I think Morris actually figured out how to make this, got this thing, because my trailer's falling apart. And as well, I can either buy a new trailer, which nowadays, what, $3,000 or something like that?
At least.
So
probably closer to 5 for what you want.
Yeah, so what I need is to, you know, I got a drive-on float for my boat.
Right.
My trailer's good enough for, like, a haul to get it fixed, but sure, it's not going to go down the road, but I don't really want to go down the road with it anymore. And so the problem is I go up and I have a step hole.
Yeah, and so you get stuck.
Yeah, it won't come back off.
Gotcha.
It went up, and I literally felt it lock into place. Which is great.
Well, yeah, because it's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
The problem is it's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
I would put a bilge pump in it and a port. You want to take the boat, fill it full of water.
No.
Plug it back in,
Morris
pump it out.
Came up with a very simple solution. He said take that last roller off, because they come right off. And
oh, it's got rollers on it.
Oh, yeah, it's got rollers.
Gotcha.
And so I take that last roller off, because it would come up over the rollers. And a step,
and then lock on that
where
step.
The front is
right,
actually deeper than the back.
Right.
You know, and it's got about a 3-4 inch lip,
right,
before the back of the hull, pad boat, step boat. And when I could literally feel that front of the boat go over and hit
thunk
over the top of them, it just went dunk, locked right in. Well, the obvious thing is, if I take that front roller off, by the time it rolls backwards, it'll have enough speed to go over the other ones.
Gotcha.
So I can just take one of the rollers off, and the thing should work. Right now, I've got you know, a rather expensive, you know, swim platform.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it sure ain't doing me no good. And as usual, if you buy something, expect no help from the factory.
No.
Once you've bought something, you know, it's like I say, this is our world, and you know, we try to help people as much as possible. And sometimes it's just like when you pray, the answer is no.
Yep.
You know, we can't do anything. But 90-some% of the time, I would rather help people when they have a problem, because that's when they need you. They don't need you when they're buying it.
No.
You know what I mean? Because you can buy stuff almost anywhere. We try to be a little more helpful, but it's after you bought it, that's when you really,
yep,
want all these,
yeah,
people.
Exactly.
And that's when they all disappear.
Right.
And that's what happened to me. I called them up, said, what do you do? I'm still waiting on a phone call days later. I think Morris figured it out.
That's probably the easiest fix.
All I'm going to do is just, you know, you'll never see pictures of it. You'll never see recommendations,
right,
for,
yeah,
it. You know, somebody asked me about the company, I'm just going to go, I have no idea. I'm not going to badmouth them, because obviously.
Now, does it hold your boat completely out of the water?
Oh, yeah. No, it does exactly what I want it to do, except it holds it completely,
right,
out,
right,
of the water.
Yeah.
It's stuck there.
Not so much a dock as it is a sandbar.
Yeah, it's literally like putting it on the sandbar. So I'm hoping what Morris said will fix. I think the main problem is my boat isn't heavy enough.
That very well could be.
My boat, I don't think, weighs enough for this particular type of floating dock.
It could be.
And there was one where the whole bunch of little squares.
Yes.
That guy was obnoxious.
Sure.
I mean, literally obnoxious. And these people are nice, you know, nice enough. But, you know, when you call and say, hey, I got a problem, send pictures and everything else, and he recognizes the problem, he goes, oh, you got a step hole. You know, look, yeah. It's locked in on the wheel and then doesn't do anything about it. You know, so we'll see. Maybe they'll come up with a solution yet. And then I'll eat crow and say, no, I was wrong.
But yeah, you never know.
Never know.
As I wouldn't usual, hold your breath.
As usual, I find myself, I think, on my own.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath.
I wouldn't hold my breath either. So, no, I seriously doubt we're going to have recommendations. If you do hear one, it's because they did step up. So, anyway, getting back to the fishing, as we try to do here.
Right.
What, I wish I could be telling you guys how great this boat floating thing is, and it's wonderful, and you know how great the company is, but I got none of that. So we're going to go back into the fishing. Your best advice, take several different kinds of baits. Be prepared for when the water's high to go up to the mangroves.
Yeah.
And when the water drops, go back out towards the sandbars. Yep. Take a second, explain to us, how would you go out to look for, actually target a cobia?
Cobia are going to be on the hard side to target. Now, a couple months ago, easy. They were grouped up on our reefs looking for food. Now that the food has come in, all those thread fins have come in, they're going to spread out and go after those. So, a few things that you can do. Find out where they like to congregate. They're always going to school someplace at some point. Sometimes you get lucky enough to find them swimming around a marker early in the morning, late in the evening. So setting up at some of our bigger markers that have a tendency to hold bait, marker one, Peace River marker one, Peace River marker two, and those are the ones that are just out in front of ponds and just out in front of
Port Charlotte Beach.
That's a good place to start. Try our reefs also. You can start working those pods of bait also, but you got to watch the bait. Look and see what it does. Not just watch the bait, watch the birds. If the pelicans are hitting that bait and that bait is staying up around that pelican, go fish that school of bait. Usually when the pelicans hit those bait pods, they sink down for a minute because they just got attacked from above.
Right.
So they're going to naturally get away from it. And then they'll come right back up to the surface where they want to be. If they stay at the surface when a pelican hits, then that's telling you they would rather take their chances with the pelican than what's beneath them. So there's something down there. It could be tarpon. It could be shark. It could be cobia. It could be Spanish mackerel.
Good.
Something's going to be down there.
Great point. Now, let's see.
I think another good tactic, float the flats. Get out there, fish for your snook, fish for your redfish, fish for your trout out on the flats. How do we usually do that? We do that sitting inside the boat because we get bored. We sit down and we put a popping cork or a bobber out there and wait for it to go down. Get up on the front of that boat, get up as high as you can and fish and look around. You're going to start seeing the cobia following the manatees, following the stingrays, stuff like that on the flats.
Or just cruising
along. Or just cruising the flats. They like to eat a lot of our flats fish. The trout, the blue crabs, the puffer fish. They love eating all of that.
Good news on the puffers. I love, yes, puffer fish. I think they're absolutely, and I don't know what other word to use, but adorable. I mean,
I could use a lot of words for them that aren't as nice, like, as that.
You know, but I mean, all of a sudden, here you got this little fish that he just blows himself up into this ridiculous ball, and you're holding him going, you know, I get why you do that, but
they're cute until they start cutting those nice little half circles out of your plastic baits.
Oh, no, they're costly. Now, as a bait shop owner, I love
them. Yeah, love them.
Because I make puffers, like, guaranteed I'm going to make more money. Because if you're going to fish with these baits, they're going to chop pieces out of them, essentially ruining the bait.
And here's the funny part. Another one. What do we do when they chop a half circle into our bait? What do? We take it off and we put on a new piece of plastic. And now they're selling plastics with bite marks out of them.
Really?
Yeah. I saw them on TV the other day. These plastics had a bite mark right out of the belly of them. I guess that's to fool the fish into saying, hey, something else ate that. It must be good. That's the only thing I can figure out.
I got to admit, you know, everybody's going to get rich in the fishing business. And I can tell you, after 30-some years of this, not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen.
If you want to make a small fortune in this business, you start with a large fortune and open up a tackle shop.
Yeah. If you want to end up with a small fortune, the best way to end up with one is start with a large one. Whether it's distribution or tackle or whatever, it's a very interesting industry, but it's... I mean, it's just funny.
I've been doing this with you for almost 15 years. I've been to a lot of the shows with you. And the level of stupidity in this business never ceases to amaze me.
It's absolutely incredible.
Never ceases to amaze me.
But what I've had to do over the last few years, because I look at what's inside of a bag. And if it looks exactly like the other one, I'm probably not going to buy it.
Right.
So I actually have to take young people or people who haven't been with me to a lot of shows, try and take somebody like that who can actually look at something and go, wow, isn't this cool? Whether it's because of the bag or because instead of having a 3/4 inch paddle tail, it's got a 5/8 inch paddle tail, or instead of a 5/8, it's got a 3/4 or whatever. And oh, this is just amazing. This is wonderful. And try and listen to what these folks are saying. Because to me, a lot of it looks alike.
Well, I'm sitting there, this guy has the greatest, newest plastic in the world, and so-and-so made this 15 years ago.
Yeah, everything old is new again pretty constantly. Now, some of the innovations I've seen in, like in the egret baits, I like the tail on it because it's exactly like what I was throwing in Europe back in the 90s. It looks like the same lure, the same bait. The tail goes side to side instead of up and down in the paddle tail. So you've got the DOA, Bass Assassin, Mirror Lure, all these storm swim sheds with the paddle tail creating that kind of thumping sound we would imagine. And now then you bring in the egret with the side-to-side swishing tail.
Which is more natural.
Yeah, but it's more about the different sound.
Sure.
You know, you're creating, we always talk about sound and vibration and everything else.
Absolutely.
Now, the egret comes out with the side-to-side. The new Live Target has the side-to-side on it. And I'm expecting to see more and more of that, because right now I would take like my DOA Calshad, but I got another bag of the egret with me because maybe that thumping of the paddle tail is going to do it, but maybe if I can do the same thing in a different type of tail, like the difference between a curl tail and a paddle tail.
Sure.
So now you get curl tail, paddle tail, side to side tail. You know, but all that makes a big difference.
Well, you would think in this day and age of technology that these people would study the bait. We can measure that vibration. We can put that vibration into data. Nobody is taking the time, and probably the money is the big one, to try and match that data from a piece of plastic to a piece of bait. You're not really seeing that. My guess is it's going to be the expense in doing all that science, but
the problem is getting the water quiet, getting the fish to work its tail, spooking it. You've got to have a very large tank, and then you got to have a lot of underwater microphones measuring equipment, because you have to get the sound, you have to measure the vibration, you have to turn the vibration into sound. The closest one who tried that was Alex Langer, and I used to work pretty closely with Alex. He was a good friend. I don't know if he's still alive or not. I know he had really bad health issues a while ago. I haven't heard from him in months, but Alex had an underwater microphone and I think underwater speakers for a while. So, you know, you could broadcast the sound of bait. You could listen for bait. I mean, it was very high tech. And I was working for Ralph in Germany at the time. And when Ralph came over here, when I wasn't working, I was back here. And we had him out in the harbor. And the problem is any waves, anything, and you don't hear anything but waves. And I think that's why the paddle tail's always been so good, because it is such a strong noise that it overcomes the sound of waves and other things in the area. And I think that's why it's still going to remain the top, whereas the curl tail is a very slight noise, a much smaller sound. but with this new side-to-side tail, it's right in between the two of the other ones. It's bigger than a curl tail, but it's not as much as a paddle tail, which could be beneficial. People have caught fish on them. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's all you can do is see.
I don't think it's ever going to be a hit like the DOA Calshads, you know, or the Storm Swim Baits, but I think it's a good backup plan.
You never know.
I think it's a good backup.
Every once in a while, one of these baits takes off. Look at the Twitch Stick.
Well, it will be, the Storm Twitch Stick, the most phenomenal bait to ever hit Florida. And
we got them by accident?
By accident. And I think what will probably happen is somebody else is going to make a modification of that egret tail the way Life Target did.
Sure.
And with the proper backing or something like that, I think that's when you're going to see a splash of this side-to-side thing.
Gotcha.
I don't know if it's going to be in this brand, but somebody in this brand will make something. Because
sure.
if they're making a big deal out of a plastic bait that has chunks out of it.
Yeah.
Good God. I guess it makes sense, but made for TV, I think.
Well, yeah. And like you said, every lure needs to be made to catch fishermen first, or they don't sell.
Well, the problem is you could have the lure that every time you throw it would catch a fish, but if nobody ever bought one, did it ever catch a fish?
Exactly. Do you hear a tree fall in the woods?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, exactly.
Chicken or egg. So, anyway, I'm going to go on the flats right now. I'm going to try paddle tails on the flats at this point. Storm Twitch, paddle tails, mirror lure MR17. I'm going to stick pretty classic, pretty standard.
Yeah.
Up on the river.
Classic. That's the word. Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, and even I had to dig out a classic bait out on the flats that I haven't touched in years.
Okay.
And that was the Blake jig.
Oh, yeah. Well, and a paddle tail.
Yeah, all it is a paddle tail, a certain color paddle tail with
it's
a chartreuse head.
Chartreuse with a...
Yeah. Chartreuse
salt
tail.
Pepper with a chartreuse tail.
And a chartreuse jig head.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he was just delighted that I had them on the boat the last time I took them out. Do you guys still fish with these? Well, not really, but I just started again because how many fish have I caught with you on these things in the past?
Well, that's what I got my snook on at Saint Sushi the other day.
Yeah.
Blake jigs and Storm Twitch. Twitch being a relative newcomer to the market, but I got to tell you, it's replaced my other standard ones. But up on the river, I'm going to go with classic rattle traps, your crawdad orange colors.
Yep.
That just proved out better than anything. And the new...
And I don't know why that color's working.
No idea.
I'm a firm believer sometimes that color doesn't work. There are times when color does work, and it is absolutely beneficial.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. It seems like no matter what color rattle trap you pull up the river... They work. But for some reason, that red crawfish seems to outproduce the other ones. Well, whatever.
Okay. So, but, yeah, I just let you know it really is orange.
It's red to me.
Okay. But that and the Live Target thread fins or whatever they are,
yeah.
Both of those upriver are actually working pretty good right now. I'm not hearing a tremendous amount from on the flats with the Life Target, although I know the guys are throwing them.
Yeah.
But I heard a lot about it in the rivers, the Caloosahatchee, the Peace River. I haven't heard anything about the Myakka, but then Caloosahatchee and the Peace, rattle traps and Life Targets are just rocking it.
Yeah.
Now, back out in the flats, like I say, I think it's going to be smaller baits. I think you're really going to have to look to some smaller stuff.
Yeah, I've been using that new 27MR.
That bigger one?
Yeah, it's the same thing as the 17MR, just a little bit bigger. I like it because it kind of narrows down the trout. The little ones don't seem to hit it as much. But it's kind of fallen off, and I've gone back to the 17, gone smaller. So you're on to something there.
Okay, so smaller baits. And by on the flats, we're talking about Eastside, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, Placida, Gasparilla Sound, yep. Pine Island Sound. It's I think you're going to get the most activity by throwing some smaller baits. Is most of the bait fish right now are fresh hatch. A lot of tiny bait moving about in Jug Creek.
A lot of small pinfish.
Small pinfish, small greenbacks, small everything right now. So we're going to go back to matching the hatch, and this is right. The hatch, the smaller baits. And even in the middle of the harbor, the glass minnows. Now, I'm hoping to get out here in just a little while on one of these cloudy days when it's not blowing 200 miles an hour. I want to top water black-tip sharks. And yes. You got to find the schools of bait for this. And, you know, I put chum bag out, trying to track bait to the boat, and then wait for the fish to start hitting the bait, and then start casting into the with a top water, a skitter walk, or a Zara Spook. The only problem I have with Zara Spook is if it's a saltwater one, it holds together. But if it's the standard one, they're glued together the head.
No.
I lose too many of the backs off.
They bite them right in half.
But I get more hits on them, but I lose.
Right.
They break them in half. They shatter them. The skitter walk holds up pretty good on those sharks. So I'm going to switch over to single hook in the back, bend the barb down, flatten the barbs completely on the front treble hooks, and go back and see if I can't top water some sharks.
And they've been out there. We actually got into a feeding frenzy the other day, and they ate anything. I think if you'd have put a large hook in the water and reeled it fast enough, they'd have hit that too. No bait, no nothing. Just throw a hook out, reel it back. Because, and I've never seen a feeding frenzy in the harbor. You usually don't get to see that.
No,
they don't do it very often.
I've seen it in the Gulf, but I've never seen it in the harbor.
The bait fish came up with the jacks and the Spanish mackerel were boiling on the surface on them. And all these big blacknose that are in the harbor right now took advantage of that. And which was the other thing that surprised me is how big the blacknose are this year. Usually the blacknose you catch are what?
Between 24 to 36 or less.
If that.
Yeah.
Usually you catch them on bait bigger than themselves. They're such voracious eaters.
Yeah.
And we're catching 4 and 5 footers.
That's
consistently.
Big. That's big.
And it's made me kind of uneasy because blacknose spaz out at the boat worse than any other shark. Even those little one-footers, you got a pretty good chance of him jumping in the boat with you.
Yeah.
And you have a greater chance of those 4 and 5 footers jumping in the boat with you.
Didn't think about it that way.
We've had it happen.
Yeah, because off in the Gulf, the way you tell a black nose when you hit one in the Gulf is he goes around and around the boat.
Yep.
They quickly. Like to circle the boat.
Quickly. It's not like a nurse shark that just makes you pace around the boat for 30 minutes. These things make you run around the boat.
Yeah.
And they do not like fiberglass for some reason.
Really?
You know, all sharks go a little nuts at the boat, but these things go absolutely ballistic.
Okay. Well, maybe they're learning.
It could be.
Or you just look mean.
It could be.
You look mean.
It could be, looking down in the water. Maybe I should smile more when I reach over the side of the boat.
Grid board. Nice, sharky. I'm going to let you go. Just be nice.
It could be. I mean, I got to talk to them nicer.
Yeah. You know. You gotta think more like these, you know, create a dialogue with them.
Yeah.
And love.
You're okay.
Yes, you're okay.
We're happy little love. Trees.
Yes. Good God. Okay, anyway, what else do we have to talk about here? Anything?
Tarpon.
All right.
Like I said, I think they're going to be phenomenal everywhere, in the pass, in the canals, in the bridges.
Now, I'm hoping we're going to have to wait till the wind and rain go to see if there's any bait up in the harbor. But if the bait comes up, I'm thinking that tarpon are going to start to move up harbor.
I've been hoping they would. I love it when they come up in the harbor.
Yeah, nobody wants to go out to the pass and fish.
No, nobody wants to go out in the pass and all that crap and deal with
all
that to fish for tarpon.
Complaining and
I'm whining and get out of my way and get off your trolling motor, get on your trolling motor and shut up.
Right. We want them... You know, along the beach is fine. Maybe even that gets a little iffy. But up in the harbor, everything's a lot more laid back.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And the nice thing is we're starting to see more and more ladyfish coming. So
but
that's going to bring them up
minnows.
In, too. That's going to bring them up, too.
Yeah, we need glass minnows to make everything start.
And I hope it's better than last year.
I got a hunch it's going to be a good year up harbor on tarpon. But it might be a late season. This might not hit for another couple weeks. But I'm hoping this rain brings enough bait in. And if the rain stops the way they say it's going to, then this should be just about perfect.
Well, the problem that we had last year, that bait finally did come up in the harbor. And, yeah, that bait usually comes to the surface about 10 o'clock.
Right.
And if you could get a whole ladyfish in front of those tarpon before they started concentrating on those baits, you were guaranteed a tarpon. The problem was ladyfish weren't showing themselves till about, 9:30. So you had half an hour to go get a couple ladyfish and get them in front of a tarpon. Because once they started swimming through those schools with their mouth open, they didn't care about ladyfish.
Right.
Why go for one fish when I can swim through a school with my mouth open and get 100 of them? And that's the way it worked out last year.
Well, I can even think, you know, the other night I was sitting there and I was a little hungry. And I looked and I saw packs of popcorn. And I went, you know what, that really does sound good. And that be very much like a tarpon going through a school of glass minnows.
Yeah.
Is we don't think about it, but, you know, as humans, you eat potato chips one at a time. You don't eat a potato.
Right.
You eat a bunch of little potato chips. You eat a handful of popcorn.
Right. I think it's like M&M's.
Right.
You don't eat M&M's one at a time.
Right.
Okay. You take a bite out of your cheeseburger. You take a bite out of your steak. You don't take one M&M at a time. You shove a handful of them in your mouth. And that's what the tarpon are doing.
And like I say, popcorn, potato chips,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff. I don't know why I never really kind of took me 30 years to have that thought. But, you know, it really, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, what do you eat by the handfuls? And it's popcorn,
yeah,
and potato chips and M&Ms,
sure,
and Skittles and all these kind of things. You put several in your mouth at a time. Even though you could eat a sandwich.
Right.
But it just sounded good with the popcorn.
Right.
It was just... So, maybe fish aren't that different after all.
It's not, because you've got to get up, you got to make that sandwich. You got to put it together. You have to build it. No different. He's got to chase that ladyfish down. He's got to put work into that ladyfish. You don't have to put any work into a handful of Skittles. Same thing with the schools of bait or the schools of glass minnows. He doesn't have to work. All he's got to do is swim through it with his mouth open.
They do the same thing with baby catfish, tiny catfish, and other species. I've watched them go through, a whole school of tiny fish that have just hatched, and they just open their mouth and just go through and suck in mouthfuls of them.
I actually got to watch a lemon shark do it offshore.
Really?
It was about 12 baits that had gotten separated from the herd, and that lemon shark did 3 or 4 circles around them to tighten them up, and then came at them, and what really blew my mind, turned itself upside down and opened its mouth. What happens when you turn a lemon shark upside down?
Goes to sleep.
Goes to sleep. It goes into a tonic shock and goes rigid. And that's exactly what it did. It put itself into that, because that bait was at the top. Now, that lemon shark's got to bring his head out of the water to eat something on the surface.
Yeah.
So instead of doing that, it turned itself upside down with its mouth open, grabbed all of those baits, and as it fell, it righted itself, naturally. And off he went. But he grabbed all dozen of those baits in one mouthful.
Wow. You know, I know we should be more regimented on the show, but on windy days and rainy days, we really don't have anything to talk about where to go and what to do, so
right,
it kind of becomes a random story day, but that was cool.
Where do you want to go? Nowhere. It's raining.
Yeah, it's raining.
It's blowing 20 miles an hour. Stay on the trailer.
Yeah.
That's the end of our show, folks. Thank you.
So anyway, I guess that's about it. Any last words, Captain Cale?
We're getting back into our summertime regimen, so always keep one eye over your shoulder watching those clouds, because those afternoon storms are going to start popping up out of nowhere like they do every year. They always catch you off guard, and when you're catching a lot of fish, you have less of a tendency to watch the weather, and you end up getting caught in it. So that's the one piece of advice I have. We're getting back into those patterns, so
keep
watch over your shoulder. Yeah.
Always good advice, but right now with the thunder boomers, you know, and if we do get storms, most often they're accompanied by lightning. This is the time of year where they're locally generated storms.
Yeah, you don't get a warning on radar. That app on your phone isn't going to do you a bit of good.
No, because that's for fronts and things like
that. Right.
This is, that storm might only be a mile across, but if you're in that mile circumference, it can be pretty intense.
And unlike you, I've never been struck by lightning, and I plan on keeping it that way.
No, I don't know what harm it did me, but, you know, if you consider I've been struck, like, okay, one time head on, knocked out.
I could
out.
Probably make you a pretty good list of what it probably affected.
Then the radiation treatments to my brain, the
diabetes. It's all a toss-up. The lists are going to be the same, but they're going to be lengthy.
You know, it could explain a lot about how erratic I am, you know. So, anyway, I guess this is Fishing Frank here in the chair. That's Captain Kale in the chair across from me. And we appreciate you listening to Radio Fishing. And you go to Amazon or any other places where iTunes or whatever and buy Diupers, or you can go to the Diupers website and buy this song. It's a good song, Fishing with Fred. And that was too short. I was talking to her. I thought it was longer.
Oh, was it? You just had a clip?
Yeah, I just took some clips out of it. We're the whole song.
And they've got a lot of good songs.
At Deer Camp.
Yeah, that one's one of their better.
So, anyway, that's the Diupers Fishing with Fred. Well, buy the song. Fisher Frank and Captain Kale. We'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. See you guys. Bye-bye.
A poker table, a nice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff. Mike can hardly steer.
Hey, watch out for the stuff.
When he opens in a pontoon boat, fishing from Moby Dick. The wife, she thinks I'm working, and the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer.